Although she might take a good nap.
Okay, let's wait. It's recording, but let's wait till the street cleaning thing goes by.
No, you should. This is good. You should keep this.
We should keep this. We should keep this. Look at it. You should have edited that out. Like, you can't.
You know what? Fungal.
Oh my god, it's really aggressive street cleaning.
Well, you got a filthy street there.
And it's about to run into a car. This is really fascinating to watch. I'm totally leaving this on the
Give
podcast.
Us the blow by blow.
Okay, so it's going by, and now it's going by. Are you excited? Are you intrigued? Are you thrilled? Oh, now it's backing up. Okay. Here we're moving on. Speaking of podcasting and general frivolity, I am. Oh my god, it's backing up again. Wow. Okay, I'm just gonna wait.
Oh, good god.
Wait for it. Okay, I think we're good. I don't know. I don't remember if I recommended this on the last episode. Oh, for the love of. What the hell is it doing right now? Oh, now it's coming back around the front. Okay.
Oh my god.
Are you fucking kidding me? Are you fucking kidding me? Okay. Here we are.
Oh my god.
We made it. Okay.
Did we?
I don't know. Okay. It's quite possible we haven't. Speaking of fun podcasts and weird frivolity, if I haven't already mentioned it on a previous podcast, I've been absolutely loving Katya's new podcast, Whimsically Volatile, which is like the best name for a podcast that has ever existed in my mind. Far better than the name of our podcast.
Hey now. We are totally pitchy and average.
Yes, we are. Oh my god, our band.
It never really took off, did it?
No, it didn't, but that's our fault. We should get on that.
Okay, so I was screwing around last night with logo design.
Mm-hmm.
Not because I want or need a logo, but I got delivered an ad that was like, make your logo for $5. And it was basically like a tool that you can just sort of screw around with making one. But it wanted a subtitle. So I was like, Kate Robbins Yoga. And then I was like, just write something. Don't think about it. And I wrote, honest. And then I wrote, no. Where do we go from here? That's awfully sanctimonious. Honestly, average. So I think I'm gonna make a logo that's got like a stag's head and an anchor, and it says Kate Robinson Yoga. Honestly average.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't worry. I'm not really gonna do that.
No, I think you should. I think it's great. I think it's wonderful. It will be, in fact, maybe the name of this episode.
Honestly average. But you're enjoying the Katya.
Yes, I
need to. How many episodes in?
There are like 6 episodes in. Kate O'Donnell was on the last one.
Oh, I gotta listen. That's really cool.
Yeah. So everyone out there, Whimsically Volatile, wherever fine podcasts are acquired. absolutely wonderful, wonderful podcast. And if you're feeling like, well, maybe I should stop listening to this podcast and go listen to that one, I would support that decision. Because I'm not sure how much I have in the tank today.
Hashtag average promotion.
Yes.
Actually, that's worse than average.
Far worse. Here's an interesting question, and I don't know whether this is accurate or not. It's just a thought that ran across my brain. I feel like sometimes when people talk about practice, they're actually talking about like teaching pedagogy. Like, because if I'm going to have a conversation about how I practice, that's a fundamentally different topic than how I teach what I practice.
So, in what context did this come up that you noticed it?
The exact context is not coming to me at the moment, but there's been like a few conversations that I've had where it has become clear that there is a confusion as to whether, when I'm talking with another yoga teacher, the conversation is about teaching or about practice. Oh, you know what? It definitely came up during one of Jay's recent podcasts where there was this sort of oscillation between the way that they were talking about practice. It was clear that embedded within the context of practice was the inevitability that you would then turn around and teach that, which I'm not which is, there's a truth to that if you're a yoga teacher, right? Like, you're on the mat, you're practicing, and then you're going to have to use whatever is, you know, discovered in practice to inform what you're going to teach. But those conversations are it's like if you're practicing and you keep having the thought of, oh, this would be a really good time to have a photograph of this so I could put it on Instagram. Like, it's just something that like pulls you out of practice mode. Like, if you're practicing something, like, oh, this would be really cool to teach. An inquiry into how to teach something is very different than an inquiry of just you on your mat by yourself trying to feel whatever it is you're feeling in that moment. This is not a fully fleshed out thought. That's why I'm asking you. So if you're like, Ryan, you're full of crap. Like,
okay, here's my thought right off the bat. And when we think about, so in Alcoholics Anonymous, there's this old adage that's like, once a pickle, always a pickle. You can't brine yourself. And so even though you can stop drinking for decades and decades and decades, the wiring of your brain is such that your addiction is dormant, but it still exists. So I propose the same thing for teachers. Once you become a teacher, I think that there may always be a part of the wiring of your brain that is, and I don't just mean a yoga teacher in this, I mean a teacher, period.
Sure.
There is always a part of your brain that will experience it firsthand, whatever it is, but then will experience it through the secondary lens of how you plan on sharing it. And I think that some of that is unavoidable and just part of the wiring of the human brain.
I know. I agree that some of it is unavoidable, especially within ourselves. But when we try to talk about the function and the reality of practice, I'm just wondering if a confusion there ends up confusing the conversation about what it looks like to actually have a practice. And like, this is part of the structural problem of how yoga, like, I was sort of thinking of this too in relation to, certain, like, especially in the context of the Ashtanga community, it's not like you go through, I mean, there are obviously, like, I don't know the exact pathway to becoming a certified Ashtanga teacher, but it takes a good long while. And you have to have been to Mysore, I'm sure, many, many times. And, you know, there is a, like, sort of apprenticing thing that I notice some people end up doing, and but it's still as like old school as you can get at this point within the structure of modern yoga teaching. And the conversation, first and foremost, is about practice, and then people get sort of anchored in that practice long enough that then, you know, if they want to, teaching becomes an option. And the when the trajectory for most people is you do some yoga and then you go to teacher training, whether you teach or not, like, I'm just wondering if this conversation about, like, how to teach someone how to practice it and just how to practice. Because the second you go to teach someone how to practice, you're automatically talking about, you know, in most cases, within the context of a 60 to 90 minute class. Which is not necessarily how... Which is just not necessary. Period. So I'm just noticing when conversations sort of weave in and out of this pedagogical conversation, which I of course find like super fascinating, and then the conversation of like, okay, what am I actually feeling on the context of my yoga mat? And I think there is a worthwhile isolation there because people are having a lot of conversations about just practice, period.
Hello.
I've been here
the last
time.
Thing I heard, yeah, I think I lost you for a little bit. The last thing I heard is period.
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Good God. I think
I'm sorry, this is just a shit show today. Go ahead.
No. I think you're looking at this through an interesting lens, both the podcast and the concept. It's hard to, and I, when I think about even something like writing, it's hard to live your life and not be like, oh, that's good material. You know, like it's just part of it.
Yeah, but that I think is distinctly different.
I don't know. I don't know that it is. I look at most things and say, wow, that's going to inform how I teach. You know, like when I'm practicing, practice at
yes,
home. I'm not doing it to plan my class, but I'm thinking, oh man, I've been doing that. I've been saying that in a weird way, or I've been thinking about this, you know, maybe I should rethink that. And I'm having that internal dialogue while I'm experiencing.
I'm not actually saying that there needs to be a perfect isolation when you're on your yoga mat practicing between those two conversations. I'm just noticing that when you go from one to two, as in you and another person, usually a yoga teacher, speaking about yoga, there is a fluidity with which people are talking about, like, practice in the context of, you know, teaching something versus, like, what they are experiencing. And part of that might just be because nobody practices.
Okay, no, I think you're right about this. I know what you're saying. It's like, I think some people's practice is just what they're planning on choreographing
a class.
And that's their, and that to me is like wildly different. And I don't understand it because I don't do it. Like, I think I used to do it. I used to be like, well, this one I'm going to teach, and let me do it a couple of times.
Yeah.
And I know that there are some really great and experienced teachers out there that teach that way. So for them, choreographer, you know, going through the moves and writing them all down, like, if that's what you need to do what you do, I mean, who am I to judge that? But for me, that literally reaches in and sucks the unborn joy right out of me.
I would agree. And also there's a like, I always write down maybe not all of what I did, but certainly if I found things interesting, I will take notes on them. And there is some process by which I then go back and look at my notes and be like, oh, okay, I'm going to teach this week. And then I have a pedagogical conversation within myself of like, okay, what's the best way to teach that within the context of what I'm trying to teach more broadly. But I've just been noticing, again, not necessarily within myself, but in conversation sometimes, it's like, it a conversation that begins with how am I practicing or what am I practicing leads like way too quickly into what am I teaching. And the minute you go into teaching, you're locked into a particular format, and there's a certain set of expectations that are experienced in that format, which then reinforces the idea that people's own practice at home needs to be within the context of that format, when in reality people's own practice can be however the fuck it is useful for them to practice. And so I'm just been very curious about that very subtle dance.
Well, yeah, I mean, it leads to the question of thinking about, you know, when we have a home practice that includes, like, videos or...
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, and, you know, I think you know where I stand on that. I like them.
Yeah.
I don't like just them.
Yeah. See,
I think they're useful.
I don't dislike them. The products that I've seen out there, no, I have to say I actually do really like Jay's, the way that one is done, the practice video. But most of the other ones I've seen, like through is it Yoga Glow? Is that? Yes. And I haven't really looked at any of the ones on Kodi. I've just seen the like preview things on them.
I've done a bunch of Kodi ones.
More
than I'd care to admit.
I'm not saying, like, they obviously are trying to figure out a format that works for the people that they are serving, but like, there were a few on Yoga Glow that were just like, Richard Freeman talks about shoulder stand. Like, it was just like 5 minutes of Richard Freeman talking about shoulder stand. And then I would watch that and be like, oh, that's really interesting. And then I would not just shoulder stand, but everything else that he was talking about within the context of those 5-10 minutes or whatever it was, would just take that and be like, oh, that seems like a fun thing to try and practice and think about while I'm moving through various asanas. And so it just sort of inspired, like, that's what I think for me, videos and things like that. It's like, it's the same way that I might like flip open a page of Victor Van Coten's book and see some like crazy wild illustration and be like, oh, that's interesting, I wonder if I can feel and work with that image in practice.
Yes.
But so I would want videos to be more like that. Like, here's a prompt, go. Or
Yeah.
not even purposely a prompt, but like, here's something interesting. Okay,
Like, here's a nugget. Here's an
bye.
angel. Here's an angel card divination stick nugget.
Yes,
Now go.
exactly. So that's how, but I do recognize that for some people that's the and I have been a fan of audio recordings that I have of people in the past. So, I've used that as like full going through the full class in that way. Though I maintain that it would be potentially difficult to get through the class if you didn't already know the teacher giving the class via audio.
Yeah, because without the subtle visual cueing.
Well, I don't even know if it, because like Barbara's audio classes are great. And she's a really descriptive teacher. Like, she doesn't actually demonstrate much at all. She just talks you through in a very skillful way. But even that, I wonder sometimes, like, am I able to track with this just because I know Barbara? Like, as I'm going through, it's like, wow, anyone could really track with this and take this class. But then I like question, I was like, is that just because you like kind of can anticipate what's about to happen? So I don't know. It's an interesting quandary as to how these materials actually help practice and how there could be materials that support practice, but not to the point where we're dependent upon them. That's what I keep struggling with.
Well, I think all materials should point towards agency.
Yes,
I think like open and honest programming should always have both in person and video should have an element of inviting people into their own practice and encouraging them to explore their own practice and reminding them over and over and again that every one of those micro decisions is their own and that they're the conductor of their own experience. I think that's really important. I don't think that that's what happens, and I certainly don't think that's what happens in teacher trainings. So why would it then happen in the classroom? Because in most teacher trainings, it's like, nope, this is how you teach alignment. These are the three things you have to consider. It's very prescriptive, you know. It's not like, okay, now go home and feel that out. You know,
Indeed.
yours might do that, Ryan, but like I don't think that that's like the universal norm is cultivating inquisitive and curious inquiry, or really just humans. Which brings us back to why might that be? I think people are either adhering to a playbook because they're part of a larger brand, or they're adhering to a lineage, which sometimes in my mind is the same thing.
I think so. I think there are elements of that, though I think some people would get angry at us for
That's fine.
saying that. I certainly, the things that people call lineages certainly have had a little bit have been around for perhaps a little bit longer than some of the
A brand.
brands that are out there. So, like, hopefully.
Of course, but the brands are often just echoes of the lineage that somebody that practiced in that lineage that broke off to go build a. Which, speaking of that,
Oh, capitalism.
is everything going to be for let's future forecast. Future forecast, is everything going to be like hot and power yoga? Is that where we're going?
Yes, I actually believe that it is. Because
Even though the demand for slow flow and restorative in some ways is growing.
I don't know that it is.
Oh no.
I mean, I would love to think that it is, but I just don't know. I just don't know. But I think of it this way. So, especially if studios are getting bought up left and right, which they are, and there's a serious expansion of, bigger corporate style outfits out there. As a business person, I wouldn't see any benefit in buying a little niche studio to add it to an already existing brand, right? You need a studio that has an element that is, well, first of all, that there are classes that are relatively, well attended, but also that speaks to a broad audience. And when business, like VC firms and things like that are looking around for that, I'm sure they're not looking at Bostra Yoga or Samara Yoga Studio. They're looking at the more independent power yoga places, because that'll slide into whatever their brand is really easily. It would be hard for to like absorb a program that you don't already have as part of your broader brand is kind of would be weird and difficult, right?
Yeah. So you look for the thing that is the closest.
Yeah, that is the closest and the most easily replicated. And so I think if it does keep going in this mode of let's buy more studios, or in the case of Core Power, build more studios, then yeah, I think everything is going to sort of homogenize into a vaguely Baptiste, power yoga, heated or unheated, but still pretty much that kind of vein of practice. And there might be variants in terms of well, this class is actually really heated, like it's going to be 90 degrees in here, or this class is, normally heated, but we're still going to cram so many people in the room that you're going to sweat your butt off anyway. So
Yeah.
I also question whether, it's kind of ridiculous to sounding when I try to promote a slower, gentler practice. It just seems really funny to me. It's just, I mean, I know I have to do it, but it's it's still so not what the culture understands in terms of physical practice across the board, not just in yoga, just physical discipline across the board.
Yeah, no, I know. Sometimes I think it is changing. When I look at some classes that are doing well, that are outside of the heated power box. I also think people are mellowing their vinyasas too. I've been basing this on very little, but from just the last 2 years of public classes I've dropped in on,
Yeah.
I feel like there's a little downshifting. And I wonder if that's because the population of mid-career yoga teachers is starting to age.
Yeah. I mean, it might be, But I still think there's going to be some, there's still always be some pressure within the market to teach a challenging class. Or, you know, in the when the phenomenon of yin yoga came up, it wasn't like the broader marketing was never like, yeah, you need to slow down. It was like, yeah, come, you know, stretch more. And it's like, well, now, especially as more and more information comes out about, you know, a more nuanced understanding of the sensations that we experience in our body, like, that has the same, like, go to your edge. It's just moving in a different direction, right? Like, it's still looking for maximum. It's just looking in more of a sensational way as opposed to a cardiovascular or strength, you know, based form, you know. So, I mean, I think there will always be room for people to do a slower thing but it's just going to be like really small. It's just going to be really small, which is great because like it's not really easy to teach the way that I teach when there's a bunch of people in the room.
When there's 60 people.
Yeah, it's just not great. So, like, do I think everything's going to be hot and power? Yes. Do I think it's the end of the world? No. I just think I'm going to have to get over my aversion to explaining to people what it is that I do and why it's valuable. I'll work on that. Where were you during the Great Mind Body Crash of 2018?
Oh, let's see. It was a cold morning.
It was a cold, cold morning.
It was a cold morning, and news came on horseback via Slack. There was something gray in the sky with a tinge of a burnt umber. I knew that day would be different because when I awoke, the nightingales were still roused. I said to Father, Father, I cannot bed the goats. Father, the cow won't milk. Anyways, yeah, so that was a shit show. That was a thrilling shit show. And do you like, I think the most exciting thing was the conversations that were like, all right, everybody, collectively, it's time for us to figure out a goddamn alternative.
Yes. I was really excited at the prospect of like going to Target and getting index cards and a little box for the index cards and a hole punch. I was really excited about that prospect. Was really,
You
really.
could.
I mean, I could.
Don't, but you could.
Yes, I could, but I won't. But I won't. But it
So
did.
it does in terms of the commercialism of things, like we're all so many studios are completely hamstrung by this company. Like just
Yes.
dependent and assume that they're dependent and have just decided to give up, you know?
Yes.
And I do think, though, that even though it's the worst, best option, it's really the only option in some ways, that there are other companies that are arriving.
Yes, and they must. I could only imagine the joy in those offices. It was like
Oh, when that happened,
ready to pounce.
they were like, quick, throw another $500 on our Facebook ads.
Yeah, and I am sure that some of those companies got a whole bunch of because not only did MindBody go down for, I think it was over. I think it was over 8, maybe even 9 hours. Because my phone app started working around like 6 o'clock, like right as I was about to sign in the evening class. But the actual like web page on my desktop didn't come back online until after the last class of the evening, which ended at like 9:15, 9:30. So it was down for like way longer than I've ever seen this. I mean, I've seen the site go down when they've like tried to run an update and like it looks wonky for like an hour and then it's back. Never this long. Never this long. So it's made even worse by the fact that in February or March, I can't remember which one, they changed the pricing and like jacked everybody up to like the next highest tier, saying that there were all of these new features and that we could downgrade if we wanted to, but you know, it was gonna be... So it was really bad timing. It was really bad timing. And if I had more time on my hands, I might actually consider looking into alternatives. But I don't have that kind of time. So I will stick with this.
So I didn't realize that they jacked up the price.
Well, they wouldn't say they jacked up the price.
Do we know what actually happened? Like,
no,
technically?
No, I have not received any communication about what actually happened. So that's a little suspicious to me as well.
All right, can we pause for a second? I'm going to run and grab the chicken.
Sure.
All right, Ryan's going to talk to you or sit in silence. I'll be right back.
And
tell
we're back.
Me something good.
Oh,
tell
yeah?
me that you like it. Yeah. Sorry. I thought you should know.
I'm glad. I'm glad you keep me informed.
I want to talk. Let's whatever the hell we were talking about. I don't remember.
I don't remember either. So we'll just start over again.
Wonderful. Because my brain is like a sweet sponge in the back of your under-sink carriage. That you were like, I'm going to save this one for cleaning the cat litter box so that I don't get it confused with the food ones. That's the sponge my brain is right now.
Great, great. Wonderful. So what was it that you wanted to talk about, Kate?
Well, on our list of topics, was anger.
Yes.
I want to talk about anger.
Okay, let's talk about anger.
Why did we put that there?
Well, we collectively experience anger. Do we not?
Yeah, absolutely.
No, I've just been... just thinking about the... degree to which I don't know, just the different ways in which we either sort of repress or ignore or have,
don't forget, vilify,
put a value judgment on something that is just simply a naturally occurring emotion, which you know, I would say is actually quite intelligent. And much like kind of a physical pain in the body is some sort of signal that some form of change or just action might need to be taken. It's just a really tricky thing to practice with, especially when the subtext of a lot of just Dharma in general is that we're supposed to arrive at some sort of constant mid-level tone, emotional tone. And of course, nowhere does it say that at all. No text has ever said that. It's just how it's like this, the subtext that kind of shows up in a lot of spaces is like that, and some of that I wonder too is if, a lot of times when people have a discussion about emotions and with respect to practice, there is a almost universal trend that I've found to talk about emotions only in their sort of most agitated state. Like when people talk about emotions within the context of practice, it's often with the context of like emotional upheaval, not just the fact that like at any given moment there is an emotional tone to our existence. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think the implication being that normalcy or health is a very small range of actual emotion.
Yes. And often might for some people be experienced as the lack of emotion.
Ooh, yes.
Or at least what is perceived as a lack of emotion. If emotion is, and the tricky thing about talking about any sort of emotional content is there's no real clear taxonomy of how we speak about emotions.
Oh, good word.
It's a difficult conversation to have, but one thing that is sort of that I had caught myself doing in my own practice in regards to that is not actually acknowledging the fact that at any given moment, in any given pose, even if I'm worried or focusing on, the bones through my foot, there is some form of intellectual experience going on, and there is some form of emotional experience going on, even if the emotion is just curious or bored, or like there's an emotional tone at any given moment, which at least for me, when people talk about practicing in the midst of difficult, or emotions, or just practicing for emotional. I feel like there's a phrase that a lot of different people use, like yoga for emotional health or yoga for whatever it is. It's immediately going to, here's an emotion, and here's how you fix it. As if an emotion were something that needed to be changed.
Yeah, so the language you'll hear is balance
Yes.
or grounding, sort of the implication of bringing down or muting.
When the reality is that I can't actually begin to have a conversation about how to practice within the context of emotions until there is just enough time practicing, just attempting to acknowledge that, okay,
Oh.
you know, apart from this physical experience I'm having, apart from the intellectual inquiry I might be having, there is some emotional tone, and let me notice that. And, you know, and within the context of doing that, more often than not, there's a lot of anger that's uncovered. Even though I know intellectually that there's nothing wrong with that, there is some conditioning to be like, either to be biased against moving into that experience, or to be and again, I'm struggling with languaging it, because it's not something that I am admitting to not having skill languaging this conversation. Having a bias against it, or I don't know, maybe that's just it. Or just having an aversion to experiencing it. It might be a better way to say it. As opposed to treating it as a, like, okay, well, why, what is this? Why is this? And yeah, that's just it. And it's actually, I would think at some point, a really potent exploration for within the context of everybody's practice. It's just usually addressed in these really either not addressed in the context of anger, I think, or in the context of depression or sadness, addressed in a really prescriptive way that just doesn't make any sense. Before there's any sort of methodology around that, there just has to be an agreement on, like, well, what the fuck are we actually talking about?
I'm gonna interject. You're talking about something that's like exciting and terrifying to me.
Yeah.
About yoga and yoga teachers currently, and it's this exact conversation. It so quickly can unravel into a pseudo psychologically informed approach to asana and mental health. Like, it so quickly becomes that.
Yes. Yeah.
In the classroom, in workshops, in the marketing of classes and workshops. And I think sort of something that you're talking about also, although maybe not directly, is having room for people in the classroom that experience emotions, either for pathological or just personality reasons, differently than you. You know, like,
yes,
not
yeah,
everybody
yeah, yeah,
walks through their lives as angry as I am, for
yes,
example. You
know, yeah,
or
yeah, yeah,
as sad as somebody else, or as whatever. Like, we all have different.
But I also,
you,
but
just
I,
as we have unique bone structures, we have unique predispositions emotionally. But then there's also all of us carrying, some of us, you know, serious mental illness. It affects 24% of the frickin' population.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think there is the question of, is it a question of variability in the same way the question of the shape of your hip socket is a question of variability, or is it a variability in terms of relativity, that, you know, we could maybe say that everybody experiences some quality of sadness, and but because someone may have been given a different marker somatically for what sadness means, that they might not identify sadness the same way that you do, even though, and we'll never know this, of course, but even though the somatic experience might be actually quite similar.
It's the old, is the blue you see and the blue I see
Yes,
the
exactly.
same argument?
So I wonder about that. I do wonder about that.
Yeah, and there's cultural implications to that too, because like growing up in an Italian family, labeling in childhood what anger and passion and, how we learn to identify the somatic experience of emotions is different from culture to culture.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So yeah, I do think though that there is a subtle, a not so subtle discouragement of anger in the yoga community. I think it's thought of as weak and childlike in some way, like because all the languaging around it is like learn how to tame yours or transmute it or in some way, shape, or form be rid of it so that you can be a placid lake of so that you can be tabula rasa.
When most especially well I think there's a context for this within various forms of Hindu tantra as well, but there is some quality of sort of through which anger, wrathfulness, as it's usually referred to, is actually the skillful thing. But it's like the difference between when anger arises in this sort of very quick reactive moment and when like you actually have the awareness to be like, oh, here's the anger dial. The only skillful thing in this moment is to turn that up and lean into it and then be able to immediately turn it down. And I've seen teachers do that. I've seen expressions of that where it's like a there is a moment of sort of sharpness almost out of nowhere, and then it immediately fades away as if nothing has happened. And people might not identify that as anger, but I do I have been too preconditioned through Buddhist study to think that there isn't if there truly is some sort of universality to the experience of anger, just in the fact that we experience not how we experience it, then there has to be some sort of wisdom in it, even though it can manifest in a neurotic way.
Absolutely. If it exists because at some point in time it was a survival mechanism.
So it's but I do think, well, I don't think any of us are anywhere near experienced enough practitioners and teachers to begin in anything other than a sort of just baseline trying to be helpful way helping with that. But I do think that there is the possibility of just being careful that however your teaching class, there is no there's less of a what's the word I'm looking for? Just the I think it's just the acknowledgement that the like we don't want to look like the stone Buddha statue because we're not. made of stone. Like that, you know. And it's not even just that, because I have been in class when people say that, you know, things will come up, they'll talk sort of in those terms. And it's like, no, we are experiencing emotion, period. And to just, you know, even if the class is about the external rotation of your hip, to like be able to hold that in context with like, while yes, we are doing something very technical that is based in the body, that you can have a sort of background awareness of like, okay, well, what is the emotional tone that's happening here? Am I annoyed? Am I aggravated? Am I sort of elated during this experience? Like to just acknowledge that that's part of what we're looking at, even if it's not directly what we're looking at in the context of class, because it would be impossible to have enough of a commonality of experience to talk about that in a group setting.
I don't know if I'm just pessimistic, but it feels ambitious.
No, it's super ambitious. And like it's something that I know my teacher thinks about a ton. And you know, he has some interesting hypotheses, but none of them that he really feels comfortable sharing in full, even with, you know, the few of us that are in the office every week. It's actually, it's just a really challenging worthwhile exploration, especially if we are going to talk about yoga being in any way holistic. It doesn't mean we have to get it figured out tomorrow. It's just like, wow, we don't actually really, this wasn't handed down to us in any way. And even if it was, because there certainly are some people who say, well, you know, you look at this, that, or the other thing. Yes, I acknowledge this, that, and the other thing. But it's still not within this modern context. And therefore is worth looking at even further.
Oh my God, yeah. I just don't trust the I don't trust the team we've got built to go into the woods on that one.
Is this like a fantasy yoga team that you've put together?
Yeah, Ryan, it is. I don't. I know it's not. But when I look around it, and like, who the fuck am I at the end of the day? Do you know what I mean? To be this judgmental. But I'm just being honest because I think there's other people that are probably thinking the same way,
Sure.
and that are also just as judgmental as me. But I've always, and we've talked about this 80,000 times, felt like an outsider in the yoga community. The truth is, I'm not, because there really is no yoga community. There's just like,
Yes.
you know, a loosely linked sense of togetherness via social media. But I really don't think that the people that are drawn to teach yoga, for the most part, are equipped in any way to even begin that inquiry. And they're not the people that I would want to do it with.
No, but there are people who practice that are equipped for the inquiry,
Yes. Okay. Fair.
which is very
Fair,
not,
fair,
which
fair.
is not necessarily the same group of people.
It's different. Which is different. Yeah, I agree with that.
And you know, it's not trying to like, but by using the word taxonomy, I'm not saying that like we're trying to put those experiences into a box. It's just saying that like at some point we need a way to communicate them. And so there is a worthwhile and potentially decades long like inquiry into like, okay, I'm having these experiences and it's not like they're new experiences to be had. We have them all the time. It's just that they're talked about in vague terms, just given the cultural sort of repression of emotion more generally. Does that make sense?
Guess who is on mute?
Yep, that was
It's
you.
me. I was gonna say, could you please say that in another way?
Okay, so it's not that a inquiry into this is about an inquiry into this can't be about writing a book. Right? Like this is these are all experiences that emotional experiences are just happening all the time. And it is useful if we're going to claim, especially if we're going to claim to have a profession called yoga therapy, to have some way to, in which we both think about and communicate around the topic of emotional experience. And especially within the, with respect to practice. And to, it's not that an inquiry like this should come out with, you know, here are the 16 emotions that exist, and these are the only emotions that exist, and if you claim that there are other emotions, then you're wrong. It's just that we don't culturally really have a way to communicate about those things, at least not in a useful way. You know, certainly there are expressions of that in a poetic way, which is in some ways more accurate to a singular person's experience to describe the experience of emotion with more of a sort of artistic lens. But if I am going to try to be helpful to myself and then eventually to others, it is a necessary inquiry to go down, just as the inquiry about how I move my body through space is a necessary inquiry to endeavor into. I don't know if I said that any better. I think I like the way I said it the first time.
I don't know if it's just my brain, but I'm struggling to find a foothold into what you're getting at. So I'm gonna attempt. Are you talking about finding a common language for describing, like starting with a common language? Is that the heart of it?
Yes, but one that's actually born out of experience. Like it has to. If it's arising out of a theoretical context for emotion, I don't know that it's really helpful. I don't know what it is because I'm still very much at the point of being like, okay, so let me just acknowledge that in any given moment of practice or any given moment of the day, there is an emotional tone. and sometimes it's a very clear one, meaning that there is an identifiable label as there being some sort of, you know, if you want to use sort of a classical yoga side of things, some sort of attachment or some sort of aversion present, like that's fine. Or you could use words like anger or sadness or rage or, you know, whatever words you want to use. But oftentimes the emotional tone is actually not clear, because it's not the emotions that we automatically label are ones that we've experienced usually with an extreme.
Like the fish doesn't realize it's swimming.
Yes. So I'm just saying we need a way to talk about the whole. It's not even a spectrum, because a spectrum, it almost implies being on a line. But the whole sort of like multi-dimensional range that is happening at all times. And it has to just begin with acknowledging that that's present at all times. And then there may be no way to describe it, which is fine. It might just be a big unknown. But, like, doing Uttanasana has not helped me with any emotional experience that I... I mean, sure, it has, but not in a prescriptive way. So it's really just a matter of including that as part of the inquiry, as opposed to pushing it away or expecting some sort of bliss or expecting some sort of stoicism as the result of yoga practice. You know what? Like, I feel like I'm just rambling like a mad person here, but.
I don't know, Ryan. I think I just, if I'm really, and this is part of it has to do with some other work I'm doing, and some other things I've just been reflecting on. I think when the conversation turns to this, there's part of me that's like, nope, shut it down. Not the work, not what you're talking about, the actual work.
Yeah.
But the conversation, like, even I got some serious, like, and this is a little bit diverting the conversation in a different direction, but, like, until, like, we collectively as yoga teachers can figure out how to have a classroom that is safer, both and more welcoming to more people, I just don't care about the emotional component yet. And I care deeply about it. I actually really care very deeply about it. I just don't trust I don't trust anything about the yoga as we understand it or talk about it to even place them in the same room. You know why? There's a lot of therapists right now, like, oh, sweetheart.
Oh.
Oh, hi. Yeah? Frankie's not into it either. She's like, there's a lot of therapists out now that are becoming coaches. Have you heard? This is a thing.
Yes, I'm aware of the distinction.
Yeah, there's also a lot of yoga teachers becoming personal.
Yes, indeed.
Personal coaches.
Maybe should we bookmark that for next time? Because that I feel like is a whole conversation.
Yes, absolutely. Because it's big.
Yes.
But can we also bookmark in its relation to this conversation? Because I think there's overlap I want to explore.
Okay, so this is like a Jay Brown style cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Great. Okay.
So terrific.
This has been Unrolled. Thank you so much for listening. If you made it this far, I'm really impressed with you. Really impressed with you. you can find us unrolledpodcast.com. You can email us unrolledpodcast@gmail.com. You can Instagram us.
You can cram it. Go on ahead and cram that gram.
I think that's about it.
Go team!
Bye.
Bye.